Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
I didn't know this church was going to turn into what it was. So I just decided, if you come to this church, you sponsor a kid. This is what you do. And if you don't want to, no problem. Go to somebody else's church. But if you come here, you're sponsoring a kid. And we had a service where instead of handing out bulletins, we handed out child packets to every person, every family, whether you wanted one or not. And we lined up the back of the auditorium with trash cans. And I preached a very emotionally manipulative sermon to convince people to sponsor kids.
You're listening to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, hello and welcome. I'm Justin Brierley, and today's show is a bit different. It's a one-to-one interview with Joby Martins, pastor of the Church of 1122 and author of a new book called If the Tomb is Empty. We're bringing you today's program in partnership with Compassion International and their amazing child sponsorship program. So, Pastor Joby, welcome along to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I've got to ask you, first of all, you pastor this multi-site church in Florida. But what's with the name? The Church of 1122, is that the time you meet? Is that a biblical reference? What is it?
It was the original time that we met, and we still meet at that time. I was a youth pastor minding my own business at this church in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and we started a brand new service, and they put me in charge of it, and I'm not very creative at all. And so we called it 1122 because that's what time we met, and then within a year and a half, it had outgrown the church. And my pastor, who's the best Christian I've ever met in my life, said, you should plant a church. And at that point, we had so many people and it had kind of been branded. We just called it the Church of 1122. So I looked through the entire Bible and I found one verse in the Gospel of Mark. Mark 11:22 says, and Jesus answered, have faith in God. So I am a complete accidental church planter. I didn't mean to.
I was assuming there must be some kind of biblical reference as well, but it's a kind of an accidental one in that way. I love it. Tell us a bit about then, you know, how things began for you. Was faith always part of your life, or was there a particular story of coming to faith for you?
Well, I grew up in the, you know, in the South here in the U.S., and everybody I knew would claim a church and claim to believe in God, but we believed in God like you believe in college football and NASCAR and the Easter Bunny, you know, and nothing personal. And then as a teenager, I went to this camp, and this Southern Baptist camp, and they knew how to put the fun in fundamentalism. And so they reenacted the crucifixion of Christ. And in that moment, when I heard Jesus on the cross say, it is finished, I knew somehow it counted for me. And my football coach ran the camp. And after singing Just As I Am about 13 or 14 times, he got up and said, I think there's one more kid out here that needs to ask Jesus into their heart. That's not even the language I would necessarily use today, but I stood up and walked down, and I did, and he did, and that's where I became a Christian. And so that camp experience impacted me like crazy. Several years later, I was on staff at that camp. It's where I led my first Bible study, preached my first sermon. My coach told me I was probably going to be in ministry. I assured him I'd never work at church, and then felt called to ministry. Did student ministry for about 15 years and then planted this church.
Wow. Wow, wow. So tell us about the journey of the church, because as you say, 2012, I think, was when you got going. It's obviously seen phenomenal growth. You're multi-site now. What's behind all that? What's been the secret to the Church of 1122?
I mean, for whatever reason, God has decided to breathe life into this. Because we sing and talk like everybody else, you know. But we preach the gospel every week. We worship our faces off. And we welcome people to come just as they are, knowing that God loves them way too much to leave them there. So 1122 is a movement for all people to discover and deepen a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so we don't back down. We just teach the truth of the good news of the Bible. I think I try to do it in a way where the person who doesn't have a big church background, there's enough stuff on the bottom shelf that they can understand. You know, Jesus taught that way. And then also, that doesn't mean we neglect the longtime believers. So we dig in at least as deep as I can go. But that's it. We're a movement for all people. And so God's drawing all kind of people unto himself. And so we started in 2012. And again, not a regular church plant story, because we planted out of an existing church. Our very first weekend, we had over 3,000 people in attendance. And then Now that's grown to, by the end of this year, we'll be in our 11th location. Two of those are in prisons. One of them is over state lines in Georgia, but most of them are in and around greater Jacksonville area.
Yeah, and in that sense, you're not just looking to build another suburban megachurch. It sounds like you want to be really involved with local communities, with urban areas. Where have those ministries come from specifically, which have involved especially the prison ministry and so on?
Well, we've never tried to be a big church. We've just tried to reach one more. And I love Eugene Peterson's interpretation of John 1:14, and the word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood. And so that's the strategy of our multi-site model. We've got people that are willing to drive from all over the place to come here, but they can't reach their neighbors, and so we just move into the neighborhood. And it's really whatever neighborhoods our people live in. And also, we're a movement for all people. And so those men in prison, and we're about to move into a women's prison, so, you know, all people just means all people. And so wherever God gives us an opportunity. And in regards to the ministries in our city, we're not trying to really be the expert in anything but church, but we're partnering with a whole bunch of folks. An initiative we're about to roll out this fall is going to be called the 10-10 Life, rooted in John 10:10, that the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but Christ said he came life that we may have it abundantly. And so the question I began to ask is, you know, what is this abundant life, and what would it look like for a church not to just simply be pro-birth, but to be pro-life from womb to tomb? And so we're partnering with a whole bunch of organizations, from pregnant crisis centers here in town to foster care to special needs ministries. We're partnering with our first responders, with senior adults. And then we're going to continue our partnership with Compassion International to release children from poverty in Jesus' name all over the world.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a moment, and I'm excited about this. And there's just a really interesting way that you got this all going at the church to begin with, that partnership with Compassion International. Just before we hear about that, we're doing something rather special, because anyone who sponsors a child from the US today from the show will actually, as a thank you, receive not only my book, Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian, but also Pastor Joby's book, If the Tomb is Empty. So double reason to make a move with today's show. But we'll give the details in a moment's time. Let's talk about If the Tomb is Empty. This is your first book, I think. Why are you starting with the resurrection, if that's not too obvious a question?
Because it's only the most important thing in all of human history and the cosmos and in our faith. If the tomb is not empty, man, we are just wasting our time. But what I found myself saying, I've been in ministry since I was 19. I'm 48. One of the things, you know this, man, in the evangelical machine, if your church grows big, you get invited to all the conferences, and then immediately everybody's like, you need to write a book, need to write a book. So they've been invited, you know, I've had those opportunities for a decade now, but I wanted to just wait until I felt like the time is right, you know? And a conversation that I found myself having over and over and over at our church was, people would come up in great need and say some form of, I find myself in an impossible situation. My marriage is impossible. The doctor's report is impossible. My finances are impossible. Or even some people would believe my salvation is impossible, right? Like God couldn't save me. And I, especially if I was talking to a believer, I'd be like, hold on. You believe fundamentally that Jesus resurrected from the grave, right? And they'd be like, well, of course I do. I'm like, all right, well, think about this. If God can breathe new life into his dead son, surely he can breathe life into your dead marriage. And then one day it just kind of fell out of my mouth. Because if the tomb is empty, then anything is possible. And so I began to teach that to our church. It began to just be this kind of victory chant that we would hold on to. And what we were doing there is just remembering the power of the gospel and the exclamation point of the resurrection. And so really the content of the book is we trace the move of God throughout the entirety of Scripture. We start at Mount Moriah. We end up back on the same mountain, Mount Calvary. And we're looking at God's glory on these mountains. He often demonstrates his glory on top of these mountains in the Scripture and his grace and mercy down in the valley. But it all points to this mountain that held a tomb, but the tomb couldn't hold the body of Jesus. And so, if God is faithful to his word and his promise through the resurrection of his son, then can't you trust him to be faithful in whatever it is that you're going through? That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, it's such an important message, and one that I'm sure resonates with so many people coming through your church. But we do live in a skeptical age, and I host a show where I bring skeptics and Christians together for dialogue and debate, frequently on the subject, actually, of the resurrection. How much do you find people need kind of evidence in the first place that this kind of a thing is believable to start with?
I think that the nature of the skeptic has changed over the years. I really do. And I think my age is kind of on the cusp of that. You know, 20 years ago, it was just if you could lay out the evidence that you could not argue with, and I think the amount of empirical evidence about the validity of the historicity of the resurrection, in my opinion, is overwhelming. And I could nerd out for a long time on those things. I think today's skeptic that's walking in, especially somebody that might walk into my church, I think they're saying, all right, just give me the bill of goods, man. Just tell me what I'm saying. What are you? I might not believe what you believe, but I want to believe that you believe what you believe. And just give me the goods. What are you asking me to sign up for? And so I think that's been a part of what has drawn so many people to our church.
In a way, what people want to see more than necessarily even, you know, evidence, you know, documentary evidence, you know, whatever, is the evidence that it actually does make a difference, because that's ultimately what will actually make people want to think about believing it in the first place, right?
100%. And look, man, I'm a Bible guy, okay? I believe it cover to cover. I believe the leather's genuine, all right? I'm a Bible guy. I think a couple of decades ago, people were arguing over, is it true? I think today, the message is it trustworthy? And I think you can, because of the empty tomb, you can say God is good, God has a plan, God is in control, and you can trust him even when you can't trust the circumstances around you. And that is a shift. And I think that's what people are looking for. Where can I put my trust? Because the current options aren't working.
Yeah. When it comes to that in your own personal life, and maybe the life of the church as well, where have you seen that sort of resurrection means anything is possible kind of reality in your own life? You know, that death-defying possible become impossible becomes possible kind of stuff happening.
Yeah, the fact that I pastor a church that has had over 10,000 people surrender their lives to Christ. I mean, you tell anybody I went to high school with that this is what I do, and they would say, there's no way. And I would say, well, if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. And a part of the reason I think he picked a guy like me is because he would have to get all the glory, because I'm just an overeducated redneck from a little hick town called Dillon, South Carolina. And, you know, my daddy said the best thing ever come out of Dillon is I-95, and that's a fact. And so if he can use a guy like me to be a part of something like this, then he can use anybody. And it's easy to look back now and say, and feel like it wasn't a big risk to plant this church, but I promise you, the months leading up to this, I thought, what in the world are we doing? You know? I mean, what are we doing? But I felt like he called me to do it, and if he called me to do it, I need to do what he says.
I mean, I'm sure you've seen many aspects of life transformation in your life, the lives of the congregation, the church community. What when it comes to the big kind of picture issues of global poverty, and we're going to obviously be talking about the Compassion program that seeks to make a difference child by child on that front, but what does the empty tomb have to say to those big issues in the world?
Well, ultimately, that God cares for them so much that he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on a cross and be resurrected from the grave. And this current situation is not their forever home. That God would love them so much that he would put on flesh and come on a rescue mission for all of us. And in fact, even the way Compassion is organized, if you think about it, is a picture of the gospel to a child that gets sponsored. So think about it. If you're a kid in Uganda and you're at a Compassion project and you have yet to get sponsored, and then somebody at my church sponsors you, after all the paperwork's filled out and all of that, your teacher from your project comes up and calls you, Justin, I need to see you outside. And I'm sure every kid, like when I was in elementary school, thinks, oh no, I'm busted. What do I do? And then they would come up to you and say, I have really good news for you. Somebody that you've never seen, but somehow has seen you, somebody that you don't know yet, but they know your name, they have paid the price for you, and you are loved. That's what Jesus did on the cross for us. Think about that. That Jesus rescued us from our own spiritual poverty and depravity. And so the bedrock of Compassion is the fact that the tomb is empty.
I love it. It's a great way of thinking about it. It's a great analogy. Talk to us about the relationship that you've had yourself and your wife and family with Compassion, where that all began, and how that started to work out in the church that you now pastor.
Yeah, I could go on and on about this. So I mentioned I was a youth pastor. We were at a conference, and there was a Compassion table there. And I thought my wife was going to the restroom, and she comes back with a Compassion packet and says, we just sponsored this kid. And we hadn't been married for a year. I didn't know I could say no. So I was like, yes, ma'am, whatever you say. And so we get this kid. We start writing letters. They start writing back. We call him Blue Boots. He had these blue galoshes all the way up to like his thighs, you know, and we'd write him letters and we'd get him back. And then a year later, we're back at that same conference, and she's like, I'm going to go sponsor another kid. I'm like, babe, you know what our budget is. At that point, it was $32 a month, and I was 38. And I said, we don't have $30 a month. And she just looked at me and said, our cable is more than $30 a month. So we called our second kid Comcast, because we turned off our Comcast to pick him up. His name was Alvarado. He was in Ecuador. He just graduated college and is in the military in Ecuador now. So we began to do that over and over and over. We just kept sponsoring kids, kept writing letters, that kind of thing. And then when I became the pastor of this church, or when I planted this church, I just decided, well, first of all, I didn't know this church was going to turn into what it was. So I just decided, if you come to this church, you sponsor a kid. This is what you do, you know? And if you don't want to, no problem. Go to somebody else's church. But if you come here, you're sponsoring a kid. And we had a service where instead of handing out bulletins, we handed out child packets to every person, every family, whether you wanted one or not. And we lined up the back of the auditorium with trash cans. And I preached a very emotionally manipulative sermon to convince people to sponsor kids. And the reason why is I thought, if I lived in Kenya or in Brazil and I knew some guy had one shot to get my child food, education, the gospel, medical care, what would I want him to say? And I would want him to say whatever he needed to say to get my kid help. And so I told our church, you can either, so there's the kid, it's an actual kid, it, you know, a packet of a kid in your hand, and you can either sponsor them for $38 a month, which is probably less than your coffee bill weekly, or you can throw them in the trash. because that's where they'll eat tonight. And man, people got mad, and there were tears, and people, I'm leaving, never coming back. So we sponsored every kid that we had, and everybody did get mad, and they went and grabbed five of their best friends. It's like, you're not going to believe what they make you do at this church. And then they just kept coming. And so at this point, we do child sponsorship every year. We do a Compassion Sunday every year. I feel like one of my jobs as a pastor in affluent America, and particularly the South, and particularly Jacksonville, is to introduce the rich people that I preach to the poor people around the world, and watch them meet one another's needs. They need each other.
Wow.
And so that's what we do. And so our church has sponsored, the last time we did it, the last time I preached it, we sponsored about, I think it was like 1,900 kids one weekend. Wow. In total, we've sponsored about 14,000 children over the last 10 years. It's just it's part of the DNA of our church.
Yeah. It's extraordinary. I love that the way you preach that first service. What about yourself? I know you sponsor several children now. What kind of stories, you know, have you seen there? What kind of relationships have you seen built, and the kind of the way that it's obviously impacted these young people's lives?
Well, I've had the privilege to visit several of the kids that we sponsor. One of the things we do now is we partner with Compassion International to plant churches that are child sponsorship programs, you know, host churches. And so as we go on mission trips to these places, I get to meet these kids. There was a girl that we sponsored in Brazil, in Caro, Brazil, which is the voodoo capital of South America. We planted a church there. There was this little girl named Shyla, and as we were pulling up on the project, the pastor said, all right, we've got two kids here that aren't sponsored, who will take one? And so me and this girl that works in missions on our staff, we decided to sponsor these two girls. And so we walk up, and I've never met her, right? She's just finding out like 30 seconds ago that I'm her new sponsor. And this girl on our staff meets her sponsored girl, and they just hug and dance and play. And I don't know if I'm just like a big scary man or what, but my little girl looked at me and she wasn't having it. Well, come to find out, she came from an abusive background, and the only men she'd ever known in her life had abused her, and she wasn't having it, you know? But because she was a part of this child sponsorship program, you know, one of the greatest ways to prevent child sex trafficking in the world is for them to have a uniform and a name badge and somebody to expect them to show up somewhere to be a part of a program like Compassion International. Okay. So I'm like, that's fine. We're going to write her letters. She didn't have to like me. No problem. That's fine. We come back a year later. The bus pulls up. We've probably written Shyla, like my little girl, my son, my wife. We've all written her letters. And especially the way Compassion has it set up now, you can do it online and drag and drop photos. And it's way better than it used to be. The bus pulls up. She comes running up to me and says, Uncle Joby, she is not the same human being. Her countenance is just 100% different. So not only has she been transformed, but the church that we planted has shared the gospel with her family, and the family has been transformed. That's just one. I could keep going and keep going. We sponsored a girl named Prossy all the way through college, through the Compassion Union staff, this leadership program that Prossy was a part of. And Prossy was an orphan. And she actually changed her name to our name. In her letter, she calls me Dad, and my wife Gretchen Mom, and she calls my kids her brothers and sisters. And now she is gainfully employed. She's about to get engaged. When she gets married, my family will travel to Uganda to be a part of her wedding. This is not just a program. Think about this. If you're a pastor of a church, I don't know who's listening, but I have the opportunity as the pastor of this church. Only so many people can go on mission trips and all that kind of thing, right? You could be a part of discipling people around the world in a one-on-one way, $38 a month, and writes you some letters. And that could be your role in the Great Commission. The majority of your church could do that right now.
It is amazing. The stories you tell, I mean, if you ever wanted a modern day example of resurrection, it's right there, isn't it? It's amazing what God can do through those kinds of situations. Now, if you're listening to this podcast or watching the video right now, we decided to do something unique this season by partnering with Compassion International again to find 100 sponsors for children whose lives can be changed, just as they have been through Joby's church community. Now, we've decided to partner with Compassion because we trust the way they work. When you invest in the life of a child every month, you can know that 80% of that is being spent specifically for the development of the little boy or girl you sponsor. Compassion doesn't obviously just give money directly to children because they know that just handing out money isn't going to make a long-term impact. But spending that money wisely for nutrition and healthcare and education, teaching boys and girls to grow up and escape poverty, that makes a huge difference. And Compassion does it all through local churches around the world. So we have a goal of finding new sponsors for at least 100 children with this show in 2022. We've made it really simple for you. You have two options. The first is that right now, even as you're listening or watching, you can open up a text and just send my name, Justin, to 83393. Now, that only works if you live in the US. You're going to get a text back with a picture of a child and a link. Click the link, follow the steps, and you can start sponsoring. It's really simple. Start to text to 83393. Put in my name, Justin. That's 83393. Now, the second option is also easy. It'll work from the US or anywhere in the world. Go to compassion.com/Justin, and you can choose exactly which boy or girl you want to sponsor. Now, we want to make this really easy for you, and so we've worked with Compassion so that you'll also get two free gifts when you start sponsoring. Again, this is a US option only. We're going to send you a copy of my book, Unbelievable, and a copy of Joby Martin's book, If the Tomb is Empty, just to say thank you. You know, one of the reasons we've decided this is so important right now is that COVID-19 is having a devastating effect around the world. Thousands more children are being forced to the point of starvation as families can't work, as jobs go away, as schools are closed. Parents who were already struggling to survive can't even afford food. If a family member does get sick, there's no way for them to pay for a doctor, let alone medicine. Parents desperate for work are losing their homes because they can't pay rent. But when a boy or girl is sponsored through Compassion, Compassion centres provide food and grocery vouchers for families who can no longer afford food. Compassion staff from the local church help families get medical care, cover the costs of treatment and so on. And Compassion is even helping to cover rent payments for families who have lost their jobs because of COVID-19. So again, here's a quick reminder on how to sponsor. In the US, you can text 83393, send the name Justin, and you'll get a link to follow and start sponsoring. Or from the US or anywhere else, go to compassion.com/Justin, and you can choose a boy or a girl to sponsor from 25 different countries. And again, that free gift when you start sponsoring from the US, we're going to send you a copy of my book, Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian, and a copy of Joby Martin's book, If the Tomb is Empty, just to say thank you. And the links are with today's show. So thank you so much. Let's get a village of kids sponsored through Unbelievable. Well, Pastor Joby, it's been so good having you on. I mean, what are some of the major lessons that you've learned personally, maybe your church has learned as a whole, being engaged with this child sponsorship program?
One of the things that I've seen, all right, when we first planted the church, all the church growth experts told me, nah, you don't want to do that. You can't take all those resources and aim them somewhere else, you know, because you guys are just getting going. And I just thought, ooh, that smells nothing at all like what Jesus smells like in the gospel. So I'm like, whatever, we're doing it. And then what I found is that generosity begets generosity. That when people begin to get a little taste of what God can do, man, this is fishes and loaves stuff, right? If when you get to get a little taste of what God can do with your little $38 a month, and you get to see this kid grow up and get educated and meet Jesus and go on to college, all these kinds of things, what we've found here at 1122 is that we have an incredibly generous church, And I think a big part of that is because generosity begets generosity and scarcity begets scarcity. And so we've asked our people, can you trust God with your finances? Can you trust God that this would be a good investment into his kingdom? And then we as leaders had to trust him too, right? And say, yeah, so that's not coming here. That's going there for the advancement of the kingdom of God. And you truly can't outgive God. Everybody preaches that. I don't know if everybody believes it or not. And that discipleship is meant to be really personal. And this is really personal.
It is. It is. And in that sense, it's not, I mean, some people just think, oh, well, it's charity. What distinguishes this from what you might just think of, oh, it's just another charity that I could choose to give to or not give to? What makes this a kind of Christ smelling, you know, church community kind of thing, which is actually not just kind of giving money to something, but it's actually about something that feels and looks more like Jesus?
Yeah, charity is, you know, often it's like rich people trying to figure out what to do with some money for tax reasons, right? This is a response to the gospel. Like, if the tomb is empty, that means that Jesus came on a rescue mission for me. And when he pushed up on his nail-pierced feet on the cross and said, "It is finished," that counted for me. And when he came out of the grave, if he can walk out of the grave, I get to walk out of the grave too. And the moment I realize that he came on a rescue mission for me, and I believe that, immediately I become a part of the rescue team. That's the difference. This is a gospel response. This is an outworking of what Christ has already done in me. And, all right, here's what's impossible. What can you do about global poverty? That's impossible, man. Somebody might say to you, "You can't do anything about it." To which I say, well, if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. And one thing I can do, Shiloh, Prossy, you know, I got name after name after name, and they're not in poverty anymore. And God used a nobody like me, just taking one simple step of obedience to do what for the majority of Christendom would have seemed impossible. What could somebody in a church in Jacksonville, Florida, do about poverty in East Africa? For hundreds of years, people would say nothing. That would be impossible. But if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. And today, through Compassion International, you could be a part of changing somebody's eternity. And that's miraculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, it's been really great chatting with you about this, Joby. God bless you and the church and your family and all that you're doing on this front. Again, if you're listening or watching today's show from the US, it's really easy to get involved. You can just text my name, Justin, to 83393. You click the link you get there, follow the steps, you can start sponsoring straight away. It's really simple. Or you can do it online, again, from the US or anywhere in the world. Just go to compassion.com/Justin. And if you do that from the USA, you will get two books as a thank you for sponsoring my book, Unbelievable, and Joby's book. He's holding it up right now. I need to grab my one. Hang on, Joby. Here we go.
Sure you do, man.
I've got a book to hand as well. Here we go. You get both of these if you sponsor from the USA. So it's well worth doing. The links are with today's show too. We've got a much more moderate goal than you've had in your church, Joby. We're just looking to sponsor 100 children through the show today. But that is kind of like a whole village of kids getting sponsored.
Incredible.
So that's the challenge we're laying down to the Unbelievable audience. 100 kids sponsored. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
But it would be
thank
awesome
you so much
you,
for
because you don't know, one of those 100 might be the next prime minister of their country, and God uses them to be a sponsoring country one day. You have no idea what that one kid, because again, if the tomb is empty, anything is possible. The kid you sponsor could change the world.
Absolutely. God bless you, Joby. Thanks so much for being with me on today's show.
Thank you.